She glanced up as David vanished into the maze. Plump flakes tumbled behind him through the car's spotlight and headlights. Ollie stood frozen above them. Maybe he was back inside the cereal aisle at Greeley's, trying to decide whether to stay or give chase. The world felt locked in suspended animation. The only thing alive was the snow. And then Darby released a gut-wrenching wail, and Makani knew. They all knew. As Makani reached for Darby, Ollie shot toward the maze. Darby shuddered, hysterical, stretching to touch Alex, but then pulling back his hand, afraid. The bumpy white vertebrae of her spine were exposed. Her neck had been slashed so deeply and so far across that she'd nearly been decapitated. Makani's skin went clammy. Bile rose in her throat. Rosemary pulled herself toward them, but then turned away in shock. "Call the police," Makani said, clambering upright to face the enormous maze. The wind gusted and the stalks swayed and rippled outward. Ollie dove into the current. So many people were in there. She couldn't leave him to face the massacre alone. The cops were on the other side of Osborne. It would take them too long to arrive. Rosemary made a noise of surprise, no doubt discovering the missed calls on her phone. "It's searching for a signal," she said with frustration. Makani nodded at Rosemary and Darby. "Stay together." "No way." Darby scurried to his feet, wiping tears and snot onto his sleeve. "I'm coming with you." Makani didn't protest. They ran, full throttle. Snapped cornstalks revealed David and Ollie's entrance. The outer wall was at least a dozen stalks thick, and the brittle leaf blades scratched and tore Makani's skin. Snow that had landed on the plants flew back into the air. Strobes burst erratically. A sinister soundtrack blared. Screams chorused nearby, and Makani's chest seized, but the screams were followed by laughter. Just a couple of friends stumbling across a costumed ghoul. She exploded out from the stalks. Three guys shrieked, completely losing their shit. One of them was wearing a camouflage hoodie. Makani fell backward, but Darby caught her as he crashed through. The hoodie guy screamed again, but the other two were already cracking up, thinking they were in on the haunted maze's joke. Makani took a second look. It was a David Ware costume. The guy was also holding a plastic knife. She held back her fury to warn them. "You have to get out of here! It's not safe!" She pointed toward the crushed cornstalks. "There are two girls out there who need your help!" The hoodie guy grinned. "Ooh!" "You don't understand," Darby said. "David is inside the maze. He just slaughtered my best friend." "Ooh," the trio said together, louder. They shook their hands with the universal sign for spooky. Makani couldn't afford to give them any more time. "Which way did they go?" Darby had the sense to look at the ground. Brace roots reached out from the soil like swollen fingers. Ears of fallen corn looked like blackened teeth and shrunken heads, their silks dangling like stringy hair. It was less muddy along the path. Straw had been sprinkled over the whole thing. But it was muddy enough, and the indentations caused by two sets of running footprints were clear. He pointed. "Here." The tracks led away from the point where Makani and Darby had entered the maze. "Go look! You'll see them!" Makani shouted to the trio as she and Darby took off. As they rounded the corner out of sight, Makani heard one of them ask, "Why weren't they dressed up like the others?" They traced over the doubled footprints, turn after turn. Every time someone screamed, Makani jumped. A sharp right, and a teenage boy covered in blood and wielding a straight razor leaped out at them. McConney and Darby shrieked and recoiled, but he was in Victorian costume, and the razor wasn't real. "So, you found old Sweeney," the boy said in a rough accent, somewhere between Cockney and Australian. "But will you discover his secret?" Darby's brow rose with recognition. "Jonathan? Ain't nobody here who goes by that name, mate. The name's Todd, Sweeney Todd. And Jonathan?" McConney didn't know who Jonathan was, other than clearly he was from the drama club. "Did you see them? Did you see Ollie or David?" Immediately, Jonathan dropped the act. Even in the violent strobe light, even underneath his pancake makeup, she saw belief and then horror register on his face. "He's here? David Ware is here?" "You have to warn them. You have to get everyone out of here," McConney said. "Go," Darby said. "Go!" Jonathan skittered away as McConney and Darby raced back down the trail. "Get out of the maze," they shouted to everyone. "Get out of here now! David is here!" Nobody took them seriously. They either thought McConney and Darby were actors or that they were acting like obnoxious, insensitive teenagers. It was snowing harder. Flakes swirled down and around them. McConney hunched as she ran so that she could still see the footprints through the white. Just as she feared they were chasing the wrong tracks, they busted through another wall. And there they were, wrestling, like the days of middle school gone by. David was on top, but Ollie had somehow managed to pin David's dominant wrist. The knife shook in David's hand, but he wasn't letting go. McConney screamed again and rushed them. David made eye contact with her just as she kicked him in the forehead. His muscles loosened. The bodies shifted. David rolled over, and Ollie scrambled away through the straw. They were both coated in mud. McConney planted herself between them. Darby shouted. Another voice called out, and McConney was knocked to the ground, the wind sucked out from her lungs. David was above her. His knife was above her. She closed her eyes as it came down for her heart. A wave of blood crashed against David's head and showered down onto her face. They gasped, and the pressure of his body released from her. Someone pulled her to her feet and held her securely, their arms wrapped around her waist and chest. "I didn't know what to do," a panicked voice said. McConney wiped the blood from her eyes. A tall girl in rectangular glasses and Victorian dress was holding a bucket. Brooke, Haley's best friend. The blood trickled between McConney's lips, and she tasted something sweet. Corn syrup. A heart was beating against her back. Ollie. She squeezed his arms. He hugged her tighter. Darby positioned himself between them and David. Brooke was backing against the far cornstalks as David wiped the fake blood from his face. He flicked it to the ground in disgust, sneering at Darby.
"It was almost you."
What?
Darby said.
"Before she moved here."
David pointed his knife at McConney.
"I considered you."
Darby was already in tears.
"I don't understand."
David had more emotion in his voice than usual. He sounded angry.
"You want out, but your roots are too strong. She's the one who will leave." "You don't want us to leave?"
Darby said it like a plea.
"We won't. We'll stay. We can help you. How can we help?"
David lashed forward, and Darby went down. McConney screamed. Darby was on the ground, clutching the wound in his chest, which was gushing blood. Ollie pivoted to shield McConney, to place his body in front of hers, before releasing her to rush David. But David rushed Ollie first. Ollie cried out near her ear. The blade sucked out, squelched back in. Ollie's breath was hot on her neck.
Back out. She was still screaming as Ollie crumpled limply to the earth. Another chest wound, gaping. Their hearts, or maybe their lungs. Her screams turned into hyperventilating gasps. A group of tweens appeared from around the bend and shrieked. David spun to attack, but Brooke was right there, and she shoved them, hustling them back through the maze. Makani trembled between the bodies of her last remaining friends. David stared at her, predator to prey. His face was long and homely, but his entire head was dripping red as the coagulating theater blood mixed with the real blood. He swished his knife and more blood flew off and through the air. Blood was everywhere. The terror was finally spreading outward. If the corn were an ocean, the cries were its waves. Manic, frenzied people tore through the dry vegetation. But Ollie and Darby had stopped twitching. Ollie and Darby were dead.
What? What the fuck?
Makani said it quietly. Exhausted. She was crying. Her question was rhetorical and not one she expected David to answer. But he did.
The fuck is, he said. You were supposed to die 2 days ago, and I was supposed to have another week. But I pushed through. I made it work. And now we're here. And soon the cops will be here. And it's fitting that you'll be my last.
He stalked toward her, backed her against an arrangement of hay bales and pumpkins and a life-size skeleton wearing a frilly Victorian corset.
You'll be here forever, he said, and I get to leave.
To prison, she said.
I was looking forward to turning myself in, but this gets me there too.
He actually wanted to be caught.
So, it's about fame? She asked. You wanted a high body count? So that you could be another Gacy? Another Dahmer?
Those assholes killed for sexual pleasure.
And you're killing for the fun of it?
This isn't fun, David said, as he lifted the knife above his head. This is just something I have to do.
Chapter 28. Makani ducked as the knife thunked into the pumpkin behind her head. She ran for her life. She fled down the path blazed by the terrified people before her, a straight line through the corn stalks. Her sneakers slapped against the churned mud as David crashed through thick stalks that hadn't yet toppled. She burst out from the maze into a huge thoroughfare. It looked and smelled like an abandoned traveling carnival. Plastic soda bottles, hot dogs, funnel cakes, roasted corn on the cob, everything discarded and trampled in the rush to escape. Fried food blended into a manure stench as she raced past the live enclosures. Pygmy goats, a hunched zebra, scraggly coyotes. The animals paced and howled. Behind her, the footfalls grew louder. She glanced back just as David was close enough to swipe. She dodged and swerved, and then careened toward the vast corn pit. The parking lot was visible on the other side of it. A split-second decision, and she hurtled herself over the edge. Corn sprayed over the rim like a pool. She hit the kernels hard, stitches snapped in her injured arm, and her swimming muscles were weak from disuse, but her adrenaline was pumping. Makani stood, and the kernels were nearly pelvis deep. She slog-ran toward help. Cars and trucks jammed the parking lot with everyone trying to exit at once. She yelled at them, waving her good arm, but their shouting and honking drowned her out. She looked over her shoulder to find David hovering at the pit's edge. He was waiting to see what she would do, determining how he should respond. He climbed onto the rim and prepared to jump. But he didn't see what Makani saw behind him. David keeled forward, knocked into the pit by a blow to the head from an iron folk art skeleton. He face-planted into the corn. His body didn't move. Relief shocked McConney.
You aren't dead.
No, Darby said. I'm not. Mud and snow and blood spattered his tweed sport coat. He clutched the decorative skeleton by its spinal cord. He used it to gesture at David.
But is he?
They bent toward the body, afraid to get closer.
I don't know, McConney said from the center of the pit. I don't think so.
Darby hesitantly stepped forward and then rapidly backed away.
Screw this, he said, dropping the skeleton. Meet you on the other side.
And he took off, sprinting around the perimeter. McConney's mind shouted at her to run. Her gut hissed that David was alive. She saw her grandmother lying in the hospital, heard Alex crying out into the night, felt Ollie crumpling against her to the ground. A hooded figure lurched out from behind a grandfather clock. A hooded figure lurched out. A hooded figure lurched out. A hooded figure lurched out.
What are you doing? Darby's voice sounded muted. No!
The parking lot was still packed with people, and the highway was clogged. McConney couldn't hear any sirens. If she ran, David could kill someone else. David would kill someone else. McConney waded toward his prostrate body. His hands were empty. Desperately, she foraged until she spotted it, a nub of black rubber poking out of the yellow corn. She lunged for the handle. It slipped out as David rolled onto his back. His eyes were groggy and unfocused. She towered over him. Her hand was sweating. It was heavier than she'd expected, heavier than the knife in her memories. David began to blink as his awareness returned. He gazed up at her. The blade flashed in the light of a distant strobe. It was long and sharp and vicious.
You don't have it in you, he said.
You don't know me, she said. David didn't know her. But McConney knew herself, and neither of them was a monster. She was a human who had made a terrible mistake. He was a human who had planned his terrible actions. You'll be here forever, he'd said, and I get to leave. Standing above him, she realized it was about Osborne. Everyone on David's checklist had been destined to move away. Whether it was because they were bound for greater things, or, like herself, they had never belonged there to begin with. Growing up in a town like Osborne made it difficult to leave. It was easy to get tied down to family or the land or the community. Everybody depended on one another to survive. It took a person with extraordinary drive and ambition to break from the pattern. Haley, Matt, Rodrigo, Caleb, Katie, and Rosemary. They were ambitious. They rose above their peers. McConney used to be ambitious, but David didn't know that. He just viewed her as temporary. It's why he'd chosen her over Darby or even Ollie. They dreamed of other places, but to someone who didn't know them well, perhaps they seemed destined to become stuck here, too. Perhaps they seemed too passive. But it was impossible to know what was inside a person, or how they might change over time. Years ago, McConney's mother had been ambitious enough to get out of Osborne, but as quickly as she'd left, she'd gotten tied down to a new place. She hadn't changed at all. Maybe that's why she resented McConney. When she looked at her, she saw the loss of her freedom, and she was too selfish to notice what she'd gained. David had planned to turn himself in. He knew that he'd be sent to the Tecumseh State Correctional Institution, the same maximum security prison Chris had visited a few days ago for work. Ollie had told her that it was only 2.5 hours away. For an instant, all this burned through her mind in an instant. Makani felt sad for David. His big, ambitious dream. It was so small. Running away from home didn't change the fact that a person still had to live with themselves. Makani had learned this, though perhaps her mother never had. Change came from within, over a long period of time, and with a lot of help from people who loved you. Osborne wasn't David's problem. For Makani, Osborne had even been restorative. Being a psychopath was David's problem. David was David's problem. Maybe there had been more people on his list, or maybe she and Rosemary were the only ones left. Maybe he had a bad childhood. Maybe he was born this way, or maybe he just felt trapped. Whatever his plans, whatever his reasons, they didn't matter anymore. He'd made his decision. And now she had made hers. As David dove at her legs to knock her down, Makani stabbed him in the middle of his back. The blade went in up to its hilt. His body collapsed into the corn. She tugged out the knife and struggled toward Darby's voice. Slowly, David crawled. A vile trail of blood slathered across the kernels behind him as Darby hefted her over the edge. Makani was shuddering in his arms, still grasping the knife, when she became aware of the crowd. They were circling the pit, surrounding it. She didn't know if David was dying, but he wasn't getting away. Osborne wouldn't let him. He had underestimated them all. He had terrorized the community, but instead of tearing them apart, the townspeople had grown closer. As the sirens broke through the silent, snowy night, his body stopped crawling. And then it stopped moving altogether. David Thurston Ware died knowing that he would never leave Osborne. David Thurston Ware died knowing that he would be buried there forever. Chapter 29. The police rushed toward them. When Chris saw Makani's wretched face, his body seemed to shatter. Officer Bev grabbed his arms to keep him from falling. "Where is he?" Chris asked. Makani could only point. He shook off Bev's grip and ran. She approached Makani and Darby with caution. "May I take that?" It took a few seconds for Makani to realize that Bev was asking about the knife. Bev removed an evidence bag from her jacket, and Makani dropped it in. "Rosemary," Makani said, remembering as the paramedics swarmed them.
"She's all right. Three college kids found her and stayed with her. One of them was wearing a David Ware costume," she added wryly. "The media's gonna love that."
At least it meant the kids had also stayed with Alex. Darby lost control, sobbing, and Makani knew he was thinking about her, too. He'd been holding Makani, but now she held him as they were hurried into an ambulance. Bev stayed with them. Makani checked to see if her phone's signal was strong enough for a call. She needed to hear her grandmother's voice, or she'd lose her mind completely. The clock turned to midnight. It was officially Halloween. Bev's shoulder radio fuzzed.
"Alive! Do you copy? My brother is alive!"
All the atoms in the universe became motionless. And then Darby whispered to Makani, "Go." As the paramedics reached to close the doors, Makani burst back out of the ambulance. She tore through the fairgrounds and down the path of demolished cornstalks, officers and medics racing behind her. "Please, please, please." Gasping and panting, she ran straight to him. He was still lying on the ground. Chris was holding his hand, and his police coat was bundled under his head as a pillow.
"Ollie," she said, falling to her knees beside him.
His eyes lit up when he saw her. Snow dusted his lashes.
"Makani."
"I thought I would have never left."
He broke into a smile, but his voice was weak.
"Darby?"
"He's okay. We're both okay. How are you?"
His smile widened.
"Nothing your grandma's doctors can't fix."
Makani laughed, wiping the tears from her cheeks and put on a brave smile of her own. She kissed his forehead. His skin was warmer than she'd expected. He tilted his head and she moved to his lips. Softly, she kissed them. A faint but reassuring pressure answered back. Chris was still holding one of Ollie's hands. With his other hand, Ollie fumbled for hers. She grasped it, and the autumn moon shone brighter, rendering the night soft and cold and safe. This is Bonnie Turpin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of There's Someone Inside Your House by Stephanie Perkins. This program was directed by Travis Tunn. Executive producer, Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2017 by Stephanie Perkins. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.